Good morning. Today is Thursday, July the 13th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie
morning.
Fleming.
Good morning, Brian.
Howdy.
How are you?
I'm here.
Excellent.
Yeah, you can tell my mind is fully engaged. Our quote this morning, hopefully it'll be a little bit more engaging than my mind currently is, comes from, actually it's a proverb, West African proverb. I like that.
Okay.
It's regional. It's not specific to a tribe or country, I guess, maybe because there's been some turnover in the last little bit. If you wait for tomorrow, tomorrow comes. If you don't wait for tomorrow, tomorrow comes. Little zen in the morning, huh? So, what's the work calendar like this week?
Summer we see a little drop down in the number of trials we get out between vacations and continuances related to people not here. But we are still very busy.
With all the posturing around the marijuana industry, what's your department ramping up for?
We have, we went through a huge reduction in the caseload related to so much of that became a misdemeanor. So that reduced our caseload. What we really see now is the significant cases related to environmental crimes. And then water diversions, issues such as that. We thought we would see an increase in the trespass grows, but so many of those people flee when law enforcement approaches. So we still have not seen an uptick in the number of those cases, although those continue to be investigated.
For clarification,
yes,
you mentioned misdemeanors and kind of pushed off to the side. The office doesn't prosecute misdemeanor?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes, we do. The impact is less to the defendant, so we see most of those resolving. Most people
prior to trial.
Right. They'll walk in and play. Versus in the past when we had major, marijuana cases, a lot of times those would go to trial. A lot of times those were...
As misdemeanors?
No, as felonies.
Okay.
That's what I mean. I'm sorry. I should have made that clear. Because obviously...
Hey, remember how long it took me to find the quote and realize what kind of day it was today.
Right. It is early for you. I get that.
Oh, my. Code enforcement.
Yes.
Okay. Right now, if a restaurant is operating outside the code, do you guys even get any paperwork on that?
No.
Okay. We get a marijuana grow. Let's say, 100,000 plants. Let's make it exciting. Code enforcement violation. Are you going to get any paperwork on that?
It depends. So... Oh. I just...
Okay. Which ones does it depend more for?
Well, most of those will be handled by code enforcement and by the what the county has set up for the...
Civil penalties.
Exactly.
Okay. KINS, News and Information Times, 819.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 824. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, before the commercial break got us.
Yes.
We were talking a little bit about misdemeanors and felonies and code enforcement to one extent or another. Now, I would imagine if it was an environmental code enforcement issue that was problematic. Okay, all over it, white on rice, no problem about it. If it was a small little one, let's say a trap in a restaurant, okay, you're probably not going to get too involved with that one. Marijuana, because it's this big flowing thing, and it can be one plant, for whatever that value is, or 100,000 plants. It could be on the grower's property, or it could be on somebody else's property. I mean, there's a ton of variables associated with it. Is there a standard structure for code enforcement, whether or not you guys get involved, or is it just a dollar sign? And if it's over this threshold point, game on. And if it's not there, then it's handled in other fashion.
So obviously we're sort of in the first stages of this, and currently what happens is code enforcement is really involved with the issues, and I'm just going to speak to marijuana, not, you know, the restaurants and other things that you're speaking about.
Lard.
Right, not lard. Not the cars in the front yard, or, you know, someone operating a business out of a home in a residential neighborhood, those sorts of things. I'm talking about the true planning / code enforcement. It's a going out to make sure people are within code, within the permits, within what they have projected as part of the permit process. And my understanding is why everyone really wants to be in compliance is because as we move forward to the next step, the idea is you want to have everything lined up so that then you can proceed with the state and actually be sort of good to go.
So for the county to get its blessing, so to speak,
yes,
to go?
Yes.
Okay.
And so that's separate and apart from what we generally see, which is either based upon complaints or based upon, you know, observations from, you know, other activities that law enforcement are involved in. They observe a grow. They observe the fact that there are diversions or environmental crimes. And so what we see come to us generally from law enforcement, sheriff's office, and other agencies, the warrants that we see now more and more involve fish and wildlife. They involve the water quality issues. So we are seeing much more what we have always seen in the past, more the standard law enforcement went out, this was observed, fish and wildlife noted, all these other violations. And then we have a series of options. We can go straight criminal, which we generally don't do. We do criminal and civil penalties, and then in some cases we are proceeding just civilly because of the fines and fees associated with water diversion, you know, the creating roads where they shouldn't be, impacting problems for your neighbors based upon what you've done to the hillside and all those other sorts of issues.
The drug asset forfeiture that used to be pretty prevalent.
Yes.
I don't know if the phrase has been morphed into something else, because I haven't heard it 3 or 4 years. I mean, you remember. I mean, it used to be the big thing that was pushed out. I think it was when Gary Philp was the sheriff, and before him, that was the big deal. You seize products that could be sold, not illegal products. You'd seize it, but it'd be destroyed. And then it would be sold or bartered away, and there would be benefit to the community. And
right.
Does that still happen?
Yes, it does.
It just isn't talked about.
Right. And we still see it. What's interesting is for a number of years, so it's sort of two ways to look at it. The number of seizures and then the dollar amount of seizures. The number of seizures, there's actually more related to the white drug. So we have more seizures by the Drug Task Force and POP in Eureka related to heroin and methamphetamine. Those tend to be, though, the $8,000 to $15,000 range. Then the flip side is, obviously, the bigger, perhaps newsy ones are the ones related to the high dollar amount, and that's what we see. You know, just recently we had in excess of $100,000 seized related to someone who was transporting marijuana out of state. But it's still ongoing. The money is then, it's statutorily, can only be used for certain purposes. You're not supposed to use it for example, salaries, but it can be used for equipment. It can be used for training. And then it can also be used, a percentage can be given away to programs that help reduce drugs and drug activity. So primarily youth programs
like
and stuff.
Diversion programs.
No. Specifically, it goes to organizations that are working with youth. So we see it going to, you know, programs that assist children, teen centers, things like that.
But it's juvenile specific.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. To keep them away from
Hopefully.
The temptation.
Yeah.
Okay. What about remediation? Do those dollars get used to backfill if there's environmental degradation?
So we've done that. The goal is always that the person who did the harm should have to pay for it. In other words, I guess the best way to think about it is forfeiture is related to you're holding a bag of money that you obtained through criminal activity. Then in addition to that, we're going to say, hey, you know what? You caused this environmental damage. That's going to be $100,000 to repair. You should now have to pay that. We shouldn't use the criminally obtained cash. I mean, it'd be like saying to the bank robber, here, we're going to take that $10,000 back from you, and now we're going to use it to pay off the damage you did. That doesn't work.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop is presented this morning by CDH Painting and by Redek. Maggie, civil fines are something that either you're really familiar with from the business side, or it's seen as something less than serving time if you're kind of more focused on the criminal side of things. How do you determine civil penalties or fines? Is there a structure? Is there a reference, a template, something that you measure things against, number of hours that are used to prosecute something? How do you arrive at this is a $25,000 fine or this is a $38,000 fine?
So it depends on the type of crime we're speaking about. I mean, there are statutory fines. So for example, driving under the influence. The statutory fines are, it's a little over $2,000 for your first-time DUI driver. So some of that is just, you know, it's...
Statewide?
Actually, it varies from county to county, as you might expect. It's, you know, because it's up to a certain amount, and then, you know, a lot of places sort of have their standardized amounts. But for other types of crimes, the civil penalty, the issue of why to go civil versus a criminal prosecution is because that's actually hopefully the best way to deter it. So, for example, when we think of marijuana cultivation sites, marijuana cultivation now in general is a misdemeanor. So the fines and penalties for that in a criminal case are actually very low. Versus the civil penalties associated with water diversion or, you know, the unlawful cutting of trees and bulldozing the sides of hills. The impact to your neighbors is significant, and the law has specifically increased those penalties. So, for example, Fish and Wildlife, all of the codes that are related to water diversion, some of them are per day, some of them are per conduct, but what we see is that some of them have specifically included if the diversion is for purposes of cultivating marijuana, it's actually a higher fine or penalty. So again, I think the codes have really tried to address what people and communities have shown is a concern they have specifically with that conduct, how it's impacting not just you know, the ability of others to have access to the water, but also how it can negatively impact and sometimes, unfortunately, permanently areas in any community.
So when you are determining which option or combination of options, and I know you're not vindictive, so I'm going to use a phrase that you may not, don't rankle on it. Don't.
I'm going to rankle.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one that's most painful?
Well, you really do look at trying to address the facts in any specific case. I mean, that's sort of how we look at all of our, you know, outcomes. You know, you're attempting to change the behavior and you're trying to make sure there's a just result. So, for example, if you have the guy who's relatively new, just setting it up, maybe it hasn't had the same impact, you know, on his downstream neighbors yet, versus the guy who we know, based upon law enforcement and the pictures that Fish and Wildlife have taken and others have looked at, hey, this has been going on for a long time. That's the guy we're going to, you know, hit harder for the penalties and the fines, because there should be a higher penalty for that. And we know that part of the behavior is related to he's making a huge profit from that. I mean, it reminds me of the old days when we had dry cleaners. You know, there were the people who were disposing of those chemicals appropriately, and then there were those who were not. The person who was not doing it was making money. You know, everybody would tell you, geez, for us to have, you know, these barrels of these chemicals taken away, it costs us $1,500 a barrel. Well, if the guy down the street is, you know, loading it on a truck and dumping it somewhere, he's making that money. And that's sort of part of the civil penalty goal is to address that and to say you shouldn't have profited from your, what I think everybody does see as criminal conduct. And so that's what we're trying to address. And that's how you try to come up with, you know, a fair outcome. And then obviously we have input from the defense. They come to us and they show us additional information, or they say, here's something else you should know.
Yeah, I donated to the PTA. Is there room for a civil determination for punitive damages as well as compensation? Are there subcomponents, I guess, within that total figure that you kind of look at and analyze to arrive at that figure?
Could you say that again? I missed the first part.
Punitive.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you are, like I say, you're trying to... I guess the only other way to look at it is for those people who are trying to do it right, who have gotten their permits, who have made sure they engineered, you know, the site so that it didn't negatively impact down the hill or downstream, or the people who have really said, I'm attempting to be a good neighbor, a good steward. You don't want that person to feel that all of the steps they took, why bother? Because this person over here, not only did they do it wrong and make an incredible profit from that, but now nothing happened to them. So the idea is you do look at the penalties both from the point of view of we don't want someone to have profited from their illegal activity, but we also need for them to understand there's a punishment associated with that.
KINS News and Information Times 842. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 847. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, before the break, you had commented that you wanted to be certain, or as certain as we can be, that the bad guys, in our working example here, the marijuana growers, don't profit from their illegal activities, and whether it's a bad guy or a good guy, but illegal. How do you determine what the profit was and for how long there was profit to come up with something that is close?
And I think that's the hardest part. I mean, sometimes you can look at the circumstances, and particularly, you know, with what is able to now be gotten off of Google and everything else, the notion of, is this a recent site? And so we can sort of look at that versus going back in time. And that's you know, obviously, I mean, my example of other businesses, perhaps, who, you know, the dry cleaner or the gas station or whatever it is, who has found a way to sort of cut corners and make a little extra cash by not following the rules. It is hard. It's hard when you're trying to go back in time. To a certain extent, it can be determined, you know, as far as when Fish and Wildlife are out there and biologists go out there, they can look at some of the damage and say, well, this isn't recent. This has been a while. And so the idea is we know by that conduct, the person who set up the site was able to make, you know, more money than if they had done it legitimately.
So are you looking at, well, semi-legitimately. Do you look at the pot farmers? Do they have books?
Some of them do, sure. So, you know, right now we're at an interesting point where a lot of people are setting up LLCs and trying to, you know, set themselves up so that in the next year they can be first in line and getting the licenses and the permits they need. So there is some record keeping. What we've seen in years past is sometimes people had kept records as far as pay in, pay out. So there was
just cash flow.
Yeah, so we
details,
had those yeah. sorts of records. We use those to prove up our asset forfeiture cases, right? Because you could say, well, you know, every other week there was $15,000 cash coming in. That's why we're going to be able to say this bag of money was illegally obtained and not necessarily the proceeds of an estate sale or a will or something else.
Yeah. Investments in coins.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
With all these being set up, the LLCs, does that provide an opportunity that if the feds decide that they're not going to recognize and they are going to come after those states who have voted to legalize medicinal and recreational, does that put them at a increased risk?
I don't know if it puts them at an increased risk or not. You know, I mean, we've seen in the past the feds have asked for records regarding to permits and stuff, so I think we're sort of in a place where we just have to wait and see what the feds are going to do.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Love that question mark. Thank you. See you tomorrow.